Hey folks, good time. Danny Bova here, giving you the intro before the intro for this very special episode. So, celebrity chef, TV personality, and crazy successful businessman Robert Irvine, who just sold his Fit Crunch business for more numbers than I can count, joined me in New York City for a live taping of this show. And man, did we have fun. Robert signed books for the crowd, poured vodka shots for people in the audience. It was a freaking blast. And we're going to be doing more of these live tapings throughout the country. So be sure to follow Entrepreneur on all social media channels to find out when one is coming to a city near you. Oh, and did I mention that all this stuff is free? Like free booze, free books. What more do you want? Some inspiration to fuel your own success story, you say. Well, if that's the case, then keep listening. Here's the new episode with my man, Robert Irvine. Hello, everyone. Hello. Shut up. Time to listen to me. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm Dan from Entrepreneur.com, and welcome to the first ever live recording of our show, How Success Happens. Give yourselves a round of applause. And please keep the applause going for our sponsor, Square, who made all of this possible. So every week on How Success Happens, I talk to people who are smarter, richer, and more talented than I am, which is a pretty low bar. But tonight's guest is well above that bar. He is a restaurateur, entrepreneur, philanthropist, chef, book author. I could go on and on, but we've got a little video just to remind you who's about to walk through that door. So let's take a look.
Hey, I'm Chef Robert Irvine. I created Fit Crunch. Let's get to work.
I've written fitness books, I've written cooking books, I've written how to bring your kids up books. This is about the people I couldn't get to.
For anyone who ever looked up at the stars in the night sky, thought of the thing they always wanted most, and whispered, someday.
We have to make it work.
Open your eyes.
Oh my God. I just needed that opportunity for somebody to help.
That's our guy. Please welcome Robert Irvine.
I'm glad you got your notes.
You left me hanging.
I'm an equal opportunity hugger.
Robert, it's like looking into a mirror.
You see the shirts? I'm wearing the same. Yeah. I've only got one.
Not I think true. You work out a little bit more than me. But anyway, welcome. It's so great to have you. There's so much to talk about just from that video.
I just want to say one thing before you get going, because I want to wake you up a little bit.
Oh,
number
please.
One, you got gray hair. Last time you didn't have that. Yeah. Can everybody stand up for a second? Right. Put your drinks down, because somebody's going to get wet. Put your hands in the air.
I don't need that for this. I want you to wave your hands like this. Then without hitting somebody, do this. Then back up the top. Back. One more. Back. Right, up the top. Now what I'm going to do, when I get to three, one, two, three, you're going to jump, scream, and shout. Make sure that everybody outside that is not here is going to enjoy being here without them being here. Here we go. One, two, three! Good warm-up. Good warm-up. Back in the air. I didn't say sit down. I didn't say sit down yet. You're not that old. Come on, dude. You got better hair than I got. Better looking and better hair. Here we go. This time a little louder. One, two, three!
Now I know you're not sleeping. Good.
All right. Well, that concludes the conversation. Robert, that video is incredible. There's so many different facets of your life, and the show is called How Success Happens. Before we get to the how, let's get to the what. What does the word success mean to you?
I think that's different to everybody, right? Success is whatever you're comfortable being, right? To me, that is, if I help a restaurant and they go on to, so the biggest restaurant debt is 1.1 million that I've done and turn it into 3.4 million in positive, right? After paying off the 1.4, that's success. Or is success that you've taken a restaurant that was failing, I've redone it and you've sold it and got out of debt and took care of your family? Because that's success too. So I think success is defined by the individual. What do you want it to be? Are you walking down the street? Are you picking up litter? Are you helping somebody that you don't know? Because that's success to me.
I'm intrigued by this notion of you getting me out of debt as a definition of success. So we'll talk about that afterwards. But what do you, when you look at a video like that, all this stuff that you've done, is there anything that jumps out at you as, God damn it, I did that?
I don't think anything jumps out. I think it's, when I was younger, it was all about getting to be famous, right? I want to be famous. I want to be famous Robert Irvine, not Gordon Ramsay or Bobby Flay. I want to be the best I can be. And success has changed over the years for me. And now it's about how can I help as many people as I can help? And it may be financially, it may be buying socks for somebody living on the street, maybe buying a tent, it may be cooking a meal for somebody. Success is different for me now than it was then, because when you reach a certain level of success, whatever that level is for each of us, it then becomes, okay, I've made money, I can live comfortably, I don't have a big house, and I don't have a big car, and I don't fly around in a private jet, and I don't do the things, because the normal people can't do that, right? So if you're trying to be the apparition or the hope of somebody else, then you have to be real. And I share that realness. Some people don't like it,
yeah,
by the way. And probably you're not going to by the end of this, but by the answers I give you. But I think that's what drives me every day, is to be better, is to help somebody that's less fortunate than me. And that's not an answer. That's a reality.
That's great. So let's go back to, I believe you were 15 years old when you enlisted in the British Royal.
Good. You're doing well so far.
15 and a half.
Yep.
Okay. Was this all the plan? I'm going to join the Navy. Then I'm going to host a TV show, and then I'm going to launch billion-dollar businesses.
So
was it all mapped out?
It's the simple answer. I used to be this really good kid, not. My mother would catch a bus. We were very poor, and I mean very poor. We lived in council housing, which is government housing, low-income housing. My mother still lives in the same house that I lived in 50 years ago. By the way, she doesn't own it. She rents it. I tried to buy it. She said no. So when she dies, somebody else gets it when they repaint it. Seriously.
Does she know how much money you make?
No, that's not true. She does. But when I started, it was, I would go to school. I wave, you know, imagine Robert Irvine, black pants, black sweater, red shirt, black and white, black and red tie. Like mother waving to the bus. Bye, mom. See you at six. I will double back and drink beer, my dad's beer, with all my friends in the house. And then one day she caught me because the phone rang and I answered it, like the Irvine residence. By the way, it was about as big as this box here, you know, part of it. And she said, what? I won't say what because we're on camera, but it wasn't very nice. And I said, oh, guys, you got to leave. I think I'm in trouble. And my mother marched me down to the recruitment office. I'd already been a sea cadet, which is like a Boy Scout, if you like, since the age of 11, now 15 years old. And she said, you're joining the military. And I said, well, I'm not joining the Army, because my brother and father were in the Army. Okay. I said, I'm going in the Navy. Why? Because I was a sea cadet and I loved the Navy. So she took me down there. And you can see how smart I am, right? Just by looking at me, you know I'm smart. Well, I took the English and math test, one being the highest, five being the lowest. I got five. And the crew said to me, I never forget it. I can see his face right now. He said, well, I've got some great news for you. You're in Her Majesty's Royal Navy. And the best news is you're going to be a cook. And I went, wow, that's the most amazing thing. Because I joined a home economics class at school at the age of 11 because it was 30 girls and me. And I thought, I'm going to get a girlfriend. I actually made a Keith Lorraine, and that changed my whole entire thought process of how does eggs, pastry, cheese, bacon, and onion fulfill somebody's food craving?
Wow. So kids.
I didn't get a girlfriend, by the way.
If you want to become a well-known celebrity chef, get busted drinking your dad's beer, and there you go. Well, your passion for the military, as we saw a little bit in there, has continued since you were a cook in the Navy. The Robert Irvine Foundation, you are a tireless advocate for military veterans, for first responders. Can you tell us all a little bit why that passion is inside you?
Well, having served in the Navy and Marines, it was life-changing for me. I joined the military at a very young age. So you imagine the Falklands, 1982. I was on a warship as a 16-year-old kid, a little older than that, but going with older guys who were my sea daddies, as we call them. You know, there was no females on ships then. I wish there was, but there wasn't. That made another story for another day, but it would have been, but there wasn't. So it was okay. I preface that. But I had to grow up really fast. And I kind of found my feet as a good leader. I'd had older people telling me what to do, but I would disagree respectfully sometimes and not so respectfully other times of better ways to do things. And they said, well, this is the way we do things. And I've always challenged respectfully authority and the way we do things. Why do we do it that way? Because we've always done it. Well, there's a better way to do it. Why don't we change it? So that was the young Robert Irvine as I started in the military. And I found as I came out of the military, I was the same human being. I'd learned systems, techniques, leadership, and more. And Matt's here somewhere. Matt, who wrote my book, he's the one that you should all be saying thank you, because he wrote Overcoming Impossible and all the other books. He's just my voice. But empathetic leadership was something that we didn't have in the military at that time. It was like, I'm a 2-star, 3-star, 4-star captain. You're a cook. You make eggs, dude. You listen to me. Yes, sir. No, sir. 3 bags full, sir. And I always challenged that because I felt there was a better way to do things. And I was on a warship called HMS Apollo at the time. And my captain, commander, he was a 3-ring commander, Payne, was 240 men on a warship floating around the ocean doing, you know, silly things or good things. And I said to my captain, I said, well, I'm going to make afternoon tea. So we used to go to bed at 2 o'clock till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then we'd start dinner. I said, well, I'm not going to go to, this is how old I am, I had Neil Diamond and Neil Sedaka on my cassette tape. There's only had one, by the way, in the Paul Falklands War. I could recite every word of that song. But I said, I want to do something. I want to make some afternoon tea, like scones, cakes, sandwiches, tea, whatever. And he said, yes, you can do it for the wardroom. That was 22 people out of the 240. And I started that. And then I said, wouldn't this be really good for morale if we did that in the main galley, in the main kitchen? And he said, well, we don't really have officers and, you know, them people. They didn't say that, by the way. I'm making that up. But, you know, it was upstairs, downstairs type of people. And I said, well, wouldn't it be great if, for morale, if we all had togetherness? And we did. And that is a tradition that Her Majesty's Royal Navy still continues to this day.
Really?
And I'm very proud of that. I was on the Royal Yacht literally last week that I served on with Queen and Princess Diana and King Charles, or then Prince Charles. And it's kind of funny. I go around with the Chairman of Joint Chiefs of today in the U.S., and we were in Rota, Spain a year ago doing the same thing, a British ship, and walked on there, and this steward in the wardroom telling me this story, and I'm sitting there listening to this guy talk about me. It's kind of fun.
You know, speaking, all this talk of scones has got me parched. Is there any beverages we can have? Oh. That'd be great.
Are you old enough to drink? Oh, that's my phone ringing, or somebody's phone ringing. No, it's me. No, it's not me.
Well, thank you so much.
What is it? Oh, Irvine Vodka.
So this is Irvine's Vodka. Well, so you could watch us all drink.
I can see you're a slow drinker.
Yeah.
Obviously, being a young 15-year-old helped me. You got ice?
Let's move on from that. So, Robert, we bring this literally up, but you've got so many different things going on and have started so many different companies, one of which, FitCrunch, which many people here may have had before. And
if you haven't, go out and buy it.
You told me the story about, you know, we talk about success, but of course it happened. Of course it all worked out. But when you first started FitCrunch, it wasn't a sure bet. And can you tell everybody a little bit about that?
So 2013, beginning of 2013, I was doing a live show in Pittsburgh, which was really all my shows, Worst Cooks of America. And let me just preface that with sad death today of Ann Burrell, who was a dear friend. So kind of I want to make sure that we recognize that, because yeah, a great human being, sad loss to the network and to me personally. We were doing that show, and then we did a whole bunch of myriad of different shows, and I put them into a 90-minute stage show. And we sold it in Pittsburgh, and it was probably 2,000 or 3,000 people in the audience. And we'd never done it before. It was just straight jackets, upside down, 6 foot, making peanut butter and jelly, get out of it. It was just stupid stuff. But it was funny. I'd have a couple of drinks before, it made it even funnier. And this guy called Justin Leonard, my COO, and he said, hey, look, I want a VIP ticket, but it sold out. He said, well, just, you know, Justin called me. I said, just tell him to show up. He's got young kids, and I'm sucker for kids. So his kids came. They were absolutely adorable. I would have took both of them and buried him somewhere out of the way and just took his kids. They were that cute. Wouldn't do that, really. But so we sat there, and I was playing with the kids. And I said, well, what do you do? In my green room before the show. And I said, what do you do? He said, well, I own a protein bar company. I said, ah. And he said, I've got some. They were disgusting. I said, well, I've got an idea for a protein bar that's better than... So most protein bars are extruded and like mixed and then extruded and cut. And I said, well, we should have a baked bar. And he's like, well, nobody does that. I said, that's why we're going to do it. And we literally did that. We baked the bar with a cookie on the bottom, and I would do a TV show, go to Costco or go in a silver wrapper and say, oh, you should try this bar. It's really good. Whoever's going to try it, just try it, and we'll try and sell it. And I thought I was going to put my name on it, like Robert Irvine Protein Bar, and it was going to be mine, and I didn't have to put any money in. Well, wrong. He asked me for money, my partner at that time, and it was $463,000. That was my life. So without calling my girlfriend, fiance, whatever you want, she was my girlfriend at that time, I said, you know what? Screw it, let's do it. So I wrote a check, $463,000, sent it to him. He cashed it, and I went to the ER. Because I thought I was having a heart attack. And it was like, I'm not kidding, this is not funny. It was, it is now.
But it's quite funny.
I thought I was having a heart attack. And it turned out they're doing all the blood tests and all the things they're doing. And the nurse says to me, well, is there anything unusual happening? I'm like, no, it's just a rosy day. It's great. It's just life. And my girlfriend, now my wife, says, well, you did write a check for your whole being. And I didn't even put the two and two together. And it was that. I wrote a check and I got anxiety and the rest followed. Like, I was a salesman. I would do TV, Dinner Impossible them days. And then I would go, oh, by the way, I'm extending a day on somebody else's dime, Food Network. Sorry, Food Network. And I would go and visit stores and say, hey, you got to buy this. You got to buy this. Yeah. So that was grassroots marketing.
Wow. Well, FitCrunch, you recently sold it for an undisclosed amount of money, which has a lot of zeros behind it. So my question to you is, why are you here? Why do you do anything?
That's funny. My money guy says the same thing. It's funny because success, again, success to me is not money. And if you're chasing money, and this is everybody, chasing money, you'll fail miserably. Because you're not happy with life, you're always chasing. FitCrunch was lightning in a bottle, although now we have four more companies like that. So there is a blueprint to that success. Could I have imagined? Look, our first year we did $5 million. I made no money for 13 years. right? We kept putting in, and if you think that a machine to make the bars was 20 million, because we used to have three lines of 18 people, 70,000 bars a day, and they went to 300,000 bars an hour. A little different. And then you have another problem. Oh, how do I pack it? We can't pack it fast enough. Then we have another problem. How do we distribute it? Then we have another problem. We have to move it away to main arteries. So there's a lot of growing pains, a lot of lessons, a lot of failures, including the packaging. I was sued. You can Google it. I was sued by Nestle in the very first couple of months for trade dress. They thought that Fit Crunch looked like their Crunch bar. Totally different, but Google it. I won. I won the US. They won Europe.
In your face, Nestle.
But we did sell it. 2013 till 2024, we sold. Rolled over some stuff. So, you know, they don't happen. And it's got nothing to do with being a celebrity. It's got to be doing with something that's different, unique.
Yeah.
And I say this to people in entrepreneur business. What is unique about you? I was just in a Disabled Veterans Entrepreneur Camp, and a young lady brought up this amazing, like, cake mix or biscuit mix. And I said, yeah, but it's very boring. And entrepreneurs don't like to be told the truth because they think you're being egotistical or think.
Yeah.
And I said, look, how about this? I love what's in it, but I don't love the packaging. I said, send me the packaging on its own. Let me redevelop it and send it back to you. And I did that exactly 2 days later. She got it back. She got three deals with major retailers.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that to me is what life is. That's what that Fit Crunch was great, but we've got humanoids. We've got self-ordering platforms. We've got food. We've got uniforms for military. We've got underclothing. We've got the blueprint never changes. The product does.
Got it. That's great. Well, it reminds me too. So your show, Restaurant Impossible. So you'd go into these failing restaurants and kind of whip them into shape. So two-part question. So our friend John Taffer does a similar thing with failing bars.
Copycat. John Taffer, I know you're coming here soon. Remember where the best restaurants in England are.
And where
you'll get that later.
Okay. So who's the better ball buster, you or John Taffer?
John does it in a suit and I do it in a t-shirt.
Are there any restaurants that haunt you to this day, what you saw?
Haunt is a really strange word. Life-changing, one, for me personally. I did a restaurant. Mum and Dad had two restaurants, one bigger, one smaller. They had an autistic kid named LJ, autistic, 300 pounds, and one of only three in the world that had this rare genetic disease. Did I know that? No. So it's real. I go in there. The team gets there the day before. They set up the tents. They do the B-roll. Oh, what's your name? Dan, tell me your story. And then I get there the next day. So they've already recorded all this stuff. And I get there. They don't tell me anything because I don't want to know nothing.
Yeah.
They put an IFB in my ear and say, okay, off you go. Have it. Go for it. So I go in there and be Robert Irvine, and I just ask five questions. And by the way, those five questions are an interrogation technique we used way back in the Second World War. Five questions, rapid succession. By the time I get the fifth question, you're answering the first question. You get confused. So I get the truth. So I hear in my ear, oh, by the way, that's not what they told us. I get a completely different story. Fast forward 48 hours, it's a real 48 hours, and we don't know the design. We know the floor print, but we don't know the design until I get in there and say, oh, well, what's around it? What should it be? And what is the capacity of the cooks and the servers and the kitchen, right? Because I can put a menu together, but they can't do it with two people, three people when I leave. So I have to be really smart. So I'm not that smart. But anyway, we're about to give the restaurant back, and I've ripped this restaurant to pieces. It was shitty, dirty, mold. I mean, the whole nine yards. It was like the trifecta of shittiness.
That was my nickname in high school, but continue.
So I'm like ready to go. I'm feeling really good. The place looks great. And my daughter is 16 years old. She's 27 now. Annalise is her name. She's one of my apples of my eye, like my other daughter, Talia. And she's with me for the first time ever on a TV show. So she's sitting there And as we're about to do, hey, here's the keys to your new home, your new car, you know, the Oprah moment, she just hands me an envelope. And I'm like, well, what's this? And she just starts to cry. I'm like, oh, okay. So I open the envelope, and it was an eviction order for a house. And it was the first time they'd ever had this, number one, but this is the only house that LJ had ever lived in.
Oh.
LJ was going to die. Guaranteed he's going to die. And I literally stopped in my tracks. So I open it. My daughter's sitting there. I read it, and it takes a minute for me, because I'm stupid, to comprehend what I'm reading. I take my phone out of my pocket, and I call Mark Summers. You know Mark Summers, Double Dare, Slime, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And he's not on set, which is very unusual, because he was always on set with me.
Okay.
And I said, hey, listen, I just need you to say yes. And he said, well, what does that mean? I said, I just say yes. Don't ask any questions. And he said, okay. I said, I need $10,000. And he said, what's it for? I said, I told you, no questions. He said, okay, yes. So I added $10,000, his $10,000, and we paid directly to the mortgage so they wouldn't be evicted.
Wow.
Now, what makes that wow is that for the first time, I lost it, because I am human somewhere. I started crying. I mean, not crying, sobbing. And my daughter's there, and I said, one thing that's really important is family. Mm. More than all the things that we have, or we want, or we need, or we think we need, the biggest thing we need is love, and it's our family. And my daughter came up, and I cried, and it was a great Food Network hit, because Robert Irvine, the tough guy, cried. But what it taught me was the show before that was about things, about restaurants, about money, and it became about real people. So we had that moment, which is great, right? And I cried and I bawled. You can look it up on Discovery and whatever. And I bawled like a baby and I couldn't stop. I was like whimpering because it was so important. And let me tell you why. So we did that moment. I think I'm just getting over it. We're feeding the people and we got 400 people. We used to feed 400 people to get the money in quickly, right? So turn and burn. I was there expediting. So LJ comes in his wheelchair, and I took a door off a service station because it was mangying and cringy and smelly and dirty. And just before opening, before that envelope happened, I asked Tom, my builder, who's an amazing builder, I need a picture to go on that wall because it looks bare. And he's like, well, how do I find one of them? I'm like, dude, just find one. That's your job. So he found one in the pod that we'd already taken out of the room, and it happened to be the same colors as the restaurant, which was great. LJ saw it, literally jumped out of his wheelchair, put me on the floor, and you can see on the show. I'm like, oh my God, this 300-pound autistic 11-year-old has just decked me. And I'm a big guy. I'm 230 pounds at that point. And I didn't realize that this was a painting that he'd done at a Make-A-Wish Foundation getaway.
Oh.
And it meant so much to him. LJ died 2 years after that show. And my live show that exists today has that whole piece of him and me, because he was the reason I changed my life.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. It used to be about things, and it became about people.
Wow. That's all these questions I have to follow that up with are just idiotic, so now I feel like a moron. But
I get emotional. So when I do a live show, and I just did one with 3,000 on a ship, and LJ comes up, I cry the whole time. I'm like, am I in menopause or something? What is going on with me? Male menopause. It happens because it changed my life. It changed my feeling towards my kids, and I love them forever. But it really changed the dynamic of the show. And if you see the first half of those shows, they went from 22 minutes to 42 minutes. And I was like, hammer, hammer, hammer. I don't care what you feel. I don't care what you think. You're failing, and it doesn't work. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to fix it. Then after that show, I started to listen more about what their impression, what their feeling was about that business, why they got into it, what was their original vision.
Yeah.
And I started to work better because I would listen more.
So I want to ask you about your leadership. So on the show, I asked Shaquille O'Neal about when he would go to a new team and what was day one like in the locker room with him. And he said, I tell the team...
I just made $300 billion, but yeah, great. What a great day.
He says, I tell everyone we're doing it my way, and if you don't do it my way, I'm going to punch you in the face. Okay? So I asked the same question to Tom Brady, and I asked him about his business team. And he said, you know, when I played football, I was a psychopath. I was so psychotic about every detail. And he said, I don't know that much about business, so I need to hire psychopaths to do that for me. So I'm wondering, when you are leading people, I mean, we've all heard you're a pretty nice guy, despite all the I'm an idiot stuff, but what's your approach to leadership and getting everyone on the same page?
I think, I've run some of the biggest food and beverage companies, for sure. I will tell you, when I started Trump Taj Mahal in Atlantic City in 1997, early, end of 96, 97, I sat in a bathroom in Trump Taj Mahal for 4 months, different bathrooms, not the same one. And I would listen to what was going on and write notes. Nobody knew who I was. And they were doing drug deals, they were doing thieving. I mean, it was like the mafia all over again in Atlantic City. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. People would swipe in their cards, their ID cards, in the morning, 8 o'clock, and go and work at Tropicana, and then come back and swipe out 8 hours later.
Really?
It was unbelievable. So I had this, have you ever seen the movie Roadhouse? I'm sure some of you have, right? At least one of you. You don't even look that old.
It was loosely based on his life.
So this was something that I lived in my life. I had a Honda Civic. I'll never forget it. I came from England. I was married. Annalise was about 4 months old. We lived in a hotel. And I had death threats. The tires were slashed. The windows were punched. It sat there for 2 years, by the way, till they towed it away. I never drove the car. Seriously. I never had a phone number in the database or an address because it was a bad time. I mean, they were backing trucks of Alaskan King crab legs. The cab would leave, and then 10 minutes later, another cab would come, and it'd be gone, and we couldn't find the footage. I mean, it was bad.
Wow.
So for me, leadership was about getting people around me. And I have Chef Shane Cash, who's one of my corporate chefs. He's been with me 30 years. He was with me in the trenches. And I say that in Atlantic City because it was tough. Leadership for me is this. Walk the walk, talk the talk. I walked into a room of 36 chefs. I won't tell you what I said. I said, my name's Robert Irvine. I was executive sous chef, number two. I came from Jamaica. I'm number two guy. This is the way I'm going to run. And if you don't like it. So they tried to drum me out, literally, by racism and all the other things that came up. That's one thing about me. You can fight me. I fired 320 people in 1 year. Through the arbitration of Local 54, the president, I said, listen, I'll fight you all the way. You give me people that I can work with, that can cook, I'll pay you whatever you want on the rate. I don't care about money. Mm. I care about people doing the job. And eventually, over time, we changed that culture to the point that we put, and this is a hilarious story, Rudy Prieto was the president of the casino, Trump Taj Mahal. Trump fired him on New Year's Eve. I never forget it. I walked up the escalator, he walked in and he fired him. Heartbreaking to me. But what Rudy did was put a phone on the wall in every hallway. It was called the President's Hotline. So if you had a problem, you could phone it and you could vent. Great idea. Well, Robert broke it in the first 5 minutes. It was up. They were complaining, and I would go to his office every day and he would say, hey, by the way, Robert, you broke your record today. You collapse the phone system because I was holding people accountable.
Yeah.
So for me, leadership, getting back to your original question, was early days, it was my way. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. Like it a little bit. I have had guns drawn on me. I've had my face pressed into a grate, you know, the water grates on the floor, like where they leave an imprint on your face. I've had all that. Been intimidated, I've been threatened. I've learned more to listen.
While your face is being pressed into a grate?
Not necessarily then, but I've learned to listen to somebody else's point of view, which was very hard for somebody that's an A-type personality. Because as an A personality, you're like getting, get it done, get out. Sorry, that's my phone. So I've learned to listen and try to understand somebody else's side of things instead of just jumping to a conclusion, just like the show. And you'll see the first four seasons of that show, I'm very intense. I don't say mean, I say intense, because I don't care about your feelings. I care about the end result. Since then, I've gone to, okay, let me listen to your feelings. Let me listen to your... And by the way, you have no idea. Meet somebody... What's your name?
Maria.
Moira?
Maria.
I would meet somebody like Maria, and she would tell me, no pun intended, oh yes, my husband cheated on me, this and this. It's got nothing to do with the TV show, but then I would feel that I have a responsibility to help you, like, for whatever reason, or somebody was raped, and I had that in a show, and the whole crew went nuts when the girl, because she was not very nice to me, now I understand why, so then I felt that I had to help her, regardless of the show, with counseling and other things. And by the way, I become great friends with them people after the fact, because they feel that you're there to expose them for all their weaknesses. And that's not what the show was. Mm. It was about literally helping people, not building things, making you successful. So when you said the first question, what is success to you? Success is, did I get out? Did I save my family? And did I help them? And the answer is yes, every time.
Oh, that's amazing.
Sorry, Maria. I know your boyfriend, didn't you?
So we're going to open it up to the crowd to ask Robert some questions. But first, we have one question that someone sent in on video. They couldn't be here, but they had a question for you. So if you can go ahead and play that. So for those listening and can't see what's happening on stage, picture that there is this huge video screen to our left, and it has just been filled with the face of Guy Fieri.
Sir Robert, Robert Irvine, I know a lot about you.
Bad English accent. I'm going to probably get killed for that.
Now, Robert's one of my really close, dear friends, and it's funny because we've known each other for such a long time. I remember the first time I ever met him, I was doing an event at a mall,
and he was there watching me.
And here's Robert Irvine. I mean, he's bigger than a house. He's just, you know, huge, and he's muscle on muscle. And I got done with it, and we started talking, and within 5 minutes, we realized that we were going to be friends forever.
And he had this amazing, when he got married to Gail, he had this amazing wedding. And I just wanted to ask him, who was the best man? That is so, just a big quandary. I'll tell you the other funny one.
Ask him about cold plunging. How's that cold plunging working out for you there, chef?
All right, so we got two questions.
So I got two questions. So the first one, Guy was my best man at my wedding. But I had another friend called Connolly, who was my chiropractor, dear friend. I took him all over the world with the military. And I said, oh, come to the wedding. And, you know, but Guy was the actual best man. So the two of them stood together, and Guy was like, I'm the best man. I'm the best man. I'm the best, I'm the best man. So I had two best men. Guy, I knew Guy when he was Guy, not the famous guy that you know. And I couldn't tell you that this guy is one of the deepest caring human beings, although he doesn't portray it, gives to our servicemen, our firefighters, our first responders. And I said to him one day, I said, hey, can you come and do this thing? And he's like, yes. And then we went to Lackland Air Force Base, where he was doing a show there, and then he invited me. Guy Fieri is a stand-up dude. He's, you know, not what you see with spiky hair. I knew him when he had black hair, by the way. And he didn't wear shorts, and now he's this huge star around the world. Just an amazing guy. So we never get time. People think that Food Network stars spend time together. We don't. We film all over the place. I film all over the world. Guy films over the United States. So we see each other, South Beach Food and Wine. We see each other, New York Food and Wine. And we never get time. We used to spend a lot of time together. Summers would surprise me on Dinner Impossible, and he would come up with a scooter and do stupid things and then piss me off and all these kind of things. And then turn the gas off when I was cooking and all this, like, Guy Fieri stuff. And then I said, look, I need some guy time. I need some me time with you and not with the world's press, because the poor guy, I don't know how he does it. I don't know how George Clooney, he's the equivalent of George Clooney to me. I don't know how you do it. So he said to Gail and I, my wife, oh, why don't you come up to this ranch? And I said, yeah, great, we come to the ranch. And I got to tell you, he cooked every meal. I mean, himself, not people. He cooked that.
Yeah.
And then he said to me, oh, I've got this sauna. Let's go in the sauna. So we had this barrel-shaped sauna. So we get in the sauna. And I'm, hey, dude, I'm Afghanistan, Syria. I'm your heat boy. I can sit there in full gear and weapons, and I can sit there all day. I don't sweat. I glow. So we're sitting there, you know, not naked. We have shorts on, just so you know.
Oh, you just ruined it.
I know. And then he said, I've got this thing. It's a cold plunge. And I said, well, what's that thing? And he says, oh, you got to love this. He gets in it, and he's submerged in it. And I'm like, what do you do? He's like, just sit here. So 13 minutes in, he is literally like shaking, you know, I mean, blue.
Yeah.
It's 37 degrees. I'm like, dude, why do you do that? That's kind of crazy. So he gets out in 13 minutes and something. So me being the competitive kind of person that I am, what was your time? 13 what? Okay, so I sat there. 15 minutes. I'm like, oh, we can do this all day. So I did 15 minutes and something. And I said, okay, I beat you. I got out. So then I got one because I thought it was really cool. And now we send each other pictures of times when we do the plunge. But it's more than that. It's a friendship that has transcended fame. And as I said, I knew him when I watched him years and years ago. We may not talk for 4 months or 5 months or 3 weeks. And it varies based on his schedule of me traveling around the world. I never lose where we are, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's like we're brethren, we're connected, soulmates.
That's great.
And I'm so happy, and I mean this, I'm so happy for his fame. I'm so happy for what he does. But what the general public don't see are what he does on the outside for first responders, the fires in California, all those other things.
Yeah.
I've seen that way before he got to that point, with restaurants through COVID and all that kind of stuff. So where I do the military stuff and the first responders, he does first responders and restaurateurs. So
that's great.
An amazing, I'd kiss him on the lips right now.
I interviewed Guy in 2008 and I'm just getting over the hangover.
The way you drink, I was not surprised. Like three ice cubes and a sip. He's still there, look.
Belittled in front of everyone by Robert. Hey, does anyone have a question for Robert? Look at this curly-haired man.
It's good curly hair, though.
No, thank you.
Oh, it's luscious.
Two questions. What is one piece of advice you've given both of your daughters? And two, what do you seek out to eat when you're in New York City?
To my girls, it's really simple. Work hard. So my young daughter, 24, just graduated 2 weeks ago as a criminal lawyer, 24. My other one is 27, Annalise. She's at Johns Hopkins. She is a pediatric speech pathologist. They're both in the service industry. And I said, whatever you do in life, make sure you love it. Because you have to go to work. And when you go to work every day, and I travel 345 days a year, I have a spouse, my wife, who is understanding, caring, and gets me. And I say to them, and my older one is married. She got married 4 years ago. I'm looking at Donna, 4 years ago, something like 3 years ago, because his mother had stage 4 cancer. She died shortly after that wedding on the beach. Then we had a big celebration a couple of years later. Life is too short. Enjoy the moments and live every moment and every second like it was your last. And I believe in that, and today proved that with Anne. You don't know what tomorrow brings. The second piece of that is, what do I eat in New York City? Anywhere somebody tells me to go. I've eaten all over. I've lived here. My dad, before he passed away 12 years ago, we got to, actually, it was kind of a funny story, but we're sitting in the bar in Town and Country, which was a place then, and this guy I thought was hitting on my dad. And he's like, hey, can I buy you a drink? And I'm like, yeah, this is like kind of weird. And this is 14, 15 years ago, because he passed 12. And we had a drink with a guy, and he's like, where are you going to dinner? I said, I think we're going to Sparks or some steakhouse. I can't even remember what the steakhouse was. He said, do you mind if I join you? I said, no. I don't know who you are. I'm like, and I just started on TV. You know, I was on TV. I'm like, this kind of is kind of a weirdo. We had a couple of drinks. We went for dinner. Keen's Steakhouse. That's where it was, because they had all the pipes. So we sit there, me and my dad. And my dad, you have to understand my relationship with my dad. When I became a cook in the Navy, he was appalled because it was servitude. It was servant in England. He came to the States. I'd already been cooking for an admiral in England, and I'd become this quasi-egg cook on TV. And he was, like, enamored. The doorman was like, Mr. Irvine, you know, cars, all that stuff. And he was enamored that somebody would talk to him that he didn't know. And I'm like, yeah, Dad, I think, you know, maybe we should just kind of cut this off. Anyway, we sit down in the steakhouse, in Keen Steakhouse. We order all this food. None of it we're going to eat because we've been drinking. And the guy, sure enough, sits on the table next to us. I'm like, oh, my God. This is like, Well, it so happened to be, we invited him over for a drink, my dad. And he said, yeah, you want to go to the Empire State Building? I said, no, it's closed for renovation. He says, yeah, I know. I'm doing the renovation. I said, oh, thinking it's BS. I'm like, so we keep drinking tequila and whatever. And sure enough, we go to Empire State Building. It's closed off. All the security. Yes, sir. No, sir. Three bags full. We go up to the owner's suite. And my dad's like, this is effing cool. I'm like, still weird for me. But yeah, okay. And it happened to be the architect and the guy that was doing it. And my dad never forgot that.
Wow.
And nor did I, by the way, because I'd never been to the Empire State Building. But it was kind of cool because no matter what, I wasn't infamous or I wasn't well known on TV. I just started, and it was kind of a weird feeling for somebody to want to give you something for nothing, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. I love food, no matter what it is. It can be a hole in the wall. It can be, my wife is the pickiest of eater. She's second generation Korean. She loves spice. I don't. So we go back and forth. My wife cooks at home all the time. I don't. I'm like, I'm coming home, I'm sitting on the couch, I'm falling asleep, I'm snoring, and then we'll have breakfast and dinner and whatever. She's the best. And by the way, she's a professional wrestler, or she was. Now she's doing TV. But.
Yes, this is true. You had a question.
I just need to know, what are those five questions that you ask in rapid succession to get
they're all dependent,
and work on Dan?
They're all dependent on the person I'm talking to. So I will tell you, then it was the chairwoman of one of the largest movie studios in the United States. Now she's the head of ABC. And she said to me, I don't believe you. And I've known her name, Dana Walden, for a long time. And her assistant for 20 years. I said, oh, here's the questions. And I knew more about her mother in 3 minutes than assistant of 20 years. And it's really understanding the people you're talking to. And the minute, so I watch body language to see how you're doing now. I watch the body language of the head, the eyes.
This is me worshiping Dan, by the way.
Yeah, you do that very well. But it's all independent of who you are and what your story is. And I get the story before I ask the questions because it's like a scab. I keep picking till you bleed. And then when you bleed, I'm like, okay, now I'm going to the artery. And that's how I do the show. Same thing.
Robert,
I just need to know you.
I just want to tell you, if he invites you to go to the top of the Empire State Building, just do not go.
He's going to throw me off.
Anyone else have a question for Robert?
Two questions. One, why vodka? And then the second one, could I take a shot with you?
Second question first, yes. And the first one is, we have two distilleries. One in Dallas that does a tequila vodka infused. Then we have vodka, gin, bourbon, whiskey. It's not just, we have 90,000 square feet. So we do a lot of different things. Just these two. So we have Boardroom Distillery is the actual distillery. And then Irvine is one of those brands. So under that brand is a chocolate martini. It's just we chose to bring this, but it's all this money. If you look at everything we do, and you can't, but I'll walk. If you look at the back of it, you'll see a logo on there. And the money that we make from all our endeavors goes to our foundation to make sure that we can buy iBots dogs. We just finished a 54-mile march with 1,300 wounded warriors, 65 of which we've taken, 100 other Americans, so that's 165, plus 1,200 or so coalition forces. 2-3 days ago, then I went straight to D.C. and did the Army birthday and things that we do there. But
that's incredible.
Everything we do goes towards charity. And I would say that we're the only charity that does unique things, not build houses. People do wheelchairs and dogs, yes, but nobody does what we do.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this man does a shot. Any other questions out there? Oh, we've got a question.
I would like a shot. But the follow-up would be, what is your biggest regret?
The biggest regret would be handing you the microphone.
What was that? What was the question?
What is your biggest regret?
Being too full of myself in the early days. I think, look, when you make it, and I bought a BMW 7 Series, and I had a private number plate, and I thought, my shit don't stink. For want of better words. I thought it was better than most. And I learned quickly that you're a vehicle, good or bad, you decide that division. And you get high on life, and I think you become something of a demon, right? And Anthony Bourdain went through it. A lot of people go through these things. And it's how to tame, and I'm lucky because I have a great wife. I have a great team that keeps me grounded because there are people that are far worse off than I would ever be. And I just did a walk with a guy that was 100% burns, or 90-something percent burns, 100, just finished his 100th operation, no arms, he has claws. And then I think something triggers in you, you realize that, you know, what is your purpose on this earth? And I'm getting a little deep now. So what is the purpose on earth? And I thought driving a big car, by the way, I had a really shitty house, but I had a big car, right? And it warmed up in it on its own when you press a button, all those kind of things. But to realize that that's not what life is about, right? It's about how do you pay it forward? How do you be the best you? And I was trying to be something that I wasn't. And I think that's my biggest regret. Early on. And that's an honest answer.
That's great.
I like this.
It is.
It's good, right?
It's delicious. Oh, we've got another question back there, and then I'm going to let everyone know that we've got Robert's book that everyone here is going to get a copy of, and Robert's going to be signing copies and taking selfies. And
yeah, it's a really good book, and it's not a book of telling you how to be successful. Matt, I know he gets all the credit because we talked forever and ever, and we didn't know what to do. It wasn't going to be a cookbook because we wrote 1,000 cookbooks. It was how to help the 2,000 people a week that we couldn't help doing a TV show. And it's masterfully done because when I met Matt, however many years, I don't even know, 15, 12, 14, I don't even know what it is. He was writing for me in Muscle and Fitness. He was a senior editor, some title that he had, but he was writing for me on fitness and started to understand me. And so to this day, he's the only guy that can understand me more than my wife. And he puts into words what I try to say. And if you follow me on social media, you know it's 140 characters with no punctuation. Then you know it's me. And I have the Twitter police say, well, Robert, that's all. But I'm like, then you know it's me. I don't give a shit. It's me, right? So Matt's done a beautiful job of taking my journey and real life circumstances and putting the 4 techniques of leadership into that book. And I will tell you, if you read the jacket on the back of it and you see who wrote about it, they're Fortune 500 companies that we have changed their culture.
Awesome.
The Walmarts, the Americans, the big companies. So I can't take credit for that. That goes to that guy right there, who is a big fanboy.
Let's hear it from
big
Matt.
Fanboy of you.
Excellent. So, all right, so we got time, I think, for one more question.
I got a little off there, but I wanted to make sure that he gets the credit for that.
You said products may change, the formula doesn't. So what is the formula?
It's like me saying to you, what's the algorithm of success, right? I'll give it to you. And one easy thing is, it's hard work, empathetic leadership, authenticity, trust, loyalty. I don't become successful without the people that work with me, not for me. I have to know that Maria has an autistic son. When she comes to work and she's having a bad day, I see where she's having a bad day and say, hey, what's going on? And she tells me what's going on. I'm like, okay, Maria, go home. Don't worry about your money. Don't worry about the time off. I got you. What does that do? It tells me, number one, that Maria knows I care about her and her family. Number two, it builds the best loyal employee you'll ever have in your life. She will bleed for you to the end of day. And I think for me, that's what success is. It's surrounding yourself with people like Donna. She's here somewhere there. Donna, Rebecca. You know, all these people that make me look good when really I'm a guy that makes eggs. And that's what success is. It's trusting the people that are smarter than you to be able to guide you. And one thing we make a mistake of, and I've told this to the Fortune 500 companies, we make mistakes in listening to the frontline employee. And I give an example. Donna used to be, I consider a big shot, she wouldn't, but I do, in Comcast. Right, I started with Comcast 13 years ago. I actually go to a New Hampshire. I went to a call center. And I picked up the headphone and dealt with complaints. I'm like, hello, my name's Robert Irvine. I'm from Food Network, and how are you? And they'll be screaming down the phone because their service are gone. I'm like, hello? So why are you so angry? Well, I can't get it. And I mean, real intense. And I'm like, how about this? Slow down, tell me what the issue is, and we'll fix the issue. Because what people tend to do is pass on because they don't have authority to deal with something. What I do with companies is say, hey, cut them three steps out. Let's go here. Let Maria decide what needs to be done. So in my bar in Vegas before they blew it up, it's going to be a stadium, Tropicana, the Oakland A's.
Oh.
I would give my bartenders $20 and they could write a check for a drink for somebody that comes in or whatever they want to do. And my servers, the same thing. Just don't abuse it, right? I give them the keys to the success. They made me successful. I wasn't there every day. I'm not a Fit Crunch every day. I'm not a Helix. I'm not a PWO. I'm not all these people that we deal with. I'm not there because I'm sitting in New York City. I was in Scotland, you know, 50 hours, 60 hours ago. So I have to rely on people to do their job. So that's what success is. Trusting the people with your livelihood. But on the flip end of that, Maria has to trust me to have her livelihood. Because that's a win-win. Stephen Covey said it. Families, 7 highly effective habits of business, all those kind of junky things that we read in the 90s. By the way, they're not junk. Because they're real. Because if I understand Maria's life, she understands my goal, I set expectations. And I'm not talking about sales numbers. Anybody needs sales numbers because we fake. How many times have you been sold a bill of goods and said, oh yeah, let's do this, and then it turns out shitty? It's not about that. It's about listening, understanding what she needs, understanding what my aspirations are, and then coming together with a common goal. And that's what success is. It's not Robert Irvine makes money and she doesn't, because that's not, I've never worked like that. I'll give you an example. We have people that don't have hours in office. They don't have time to go to work. One thing I do is they have to work out 1 hour a day at that point, no matter what, my time or theirs, I don't care. But if I pick up the phone and somebody calls me from Korea at 2 o'clock in the morning and I call Maria 15 minutes later and say, hey girl, you better pick up the phone. That's our relationship. That's because we're changing lives and we do that. And that, you know, Donna will tell you that's true. So for me, it's about mutual respect. You need something, you want 4 weeks off? Got you. But make sure that somebody doesn't drop the ball on your job while you're gone. And vice versa, if, what's your name?
Jorge.
I can't even hear that, but
Jorge.
I'm dead. Jorge, sorry. If Jorge wants to go 4 weeks, then Maria has to take that 4 weeks, right? So, and we get that every day. That's the fun part about this business. It never gets old. I traveled 345 days a year. And the best thing was, I just told you back there, I had 4 days in the Scottish Highlands with no phone service. It was amazing.
Awesome. Well, Robert, thank you so
That's
much.
It? Dude.
I think we've all learned enough about Maria. And
Dan, the madman.
But cheers to
oh,
you.
I don't have one. You.
If people grab glasses and this bottle's here, you know.
The bottle's worth a lot of money, by the way.
You know, no one's going to look twice.
Here's to Entrepreneur and you.
Here's to you, Robert Irvine, and to all of you.
So you keep that.
A big thanks again to Maria. Square for making this happen. And to Maria.
Maria just dropped the cork.
Maria, you've had some struggles in your life, but we're all behind you.
But remember, you've already got a cork from Robert Irvine.
All right, thanks, everyone.
So look at that. No, you got to look at that. It's a very unique cork made in Portugal. It's got the Navy, so it's good. All right, say
awesome.
Goodbye.
All right, thank you so much, and thanks again to Square. Thank you all for being here, and we'll see you outside. Robert signing books.
Yay! Yay!
Hey, what's the biggest hurdle that you feel like is getting in the way of your success? Let me know at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com and I will ask our next guest.